You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, November 17th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Republican Georgian Secretary of State says Lindsey Graham has been pressuring him to invalidate ballots. Meanwhile, Donald Trump blocking the transition big time. Joe Biden looking for a workaround. Meanwhile, Biden separately threatening to turn the page and not hold any wrongdoing in the Trump administration accountable. Speaking of holding them to account, now it's moderates trying to hold the Democratic leadership to account. California warns of a curfew in a bid to slow corona infections as Sweden is headed towards a lockdown. Biden getting pressured to provide college debt relief. Looks like he may do it. Republicans looking to auction off the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge before Joe Biden can get in and block that sale. NATO fears Trump will unilaterally pull out of Afghanistan. And just as a side note, Trump wanted to bomb Iran as recently as last Thursday. All this and more on today's program. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate your being here. Joining me, of course, in studio. We're in studio today. Some days we won't be. Some days we will be. Sometimes we will be remote. Emma Vigeland. Emma, how are you?
I'm good, Sam. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. It is. It's just another Tuesday as we watch the Trump attempt to forestall, I guess, the results from this election continue to crumble all around. They keep sending waves and waves. I think they're on now attorney number like 43 or something in terms of going in. My understanding is that Rudy Giuliani is trying to see if he can show up in court. That actually I would watch. If they could put a camera in there, I would watch that on live TV.
They need to televise that like the OJ trial.
Indeed. Rudy Giuliani, that'd be quite a show. But really, the big story is going to come out of, and again, I mean, this is pretty shocking stuff where you have a Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, who is now claiming that Lindsey Graham is leaning on him about the results. We will get to that in a moment. A bunch of stuff that we've got to talk about today. But let's start here with Joe Biden had some, you know, we were talking about this before the show, some fairly progressive, relatively speaking,
relative parts, for him.
Relative for him. And in many respects, relative to where the Democratic Party, the elected leadership has been over, you know, over the past, I don't know, 15, 20 years in his platform that he never spoke about. I mean, it's quite clear that he wanted to make this election a referendum on Donald Trump. And unfortunately, the majority of Americans in this country decided that they wanted to dump Donald Trump. Sadly, that I think hurt down ballot races because they weren't running on anything that they that people could not vote for a Democrat down ballot and achieve what the main thrust of the Democrats was, which was to get rid of Donald Trump. And the Democratic Party did a very bad job. We've talked about this. We'll continue to talk about it, of holding Republicans to account. We have another example of this from Dick Durbin, the Democratic whip in the Senate, And we will talk about that in a bit. But let's start with Joe Biden. And one of the things, regardless of what happens in Georgia, where we have this runoff on January 5th, if both Democrats win, the Democrats will have a majority, if you count the vice president being able to vote in the Senate, within the Senate. That is less relevant when it comes to things like normal legislation, because of the filibuster. And it is clear at this point that Joe Manchin says he will not vote for the filibuster. Who knows?
Well, he's saying that on all over cable news, his favorite medium to get attention.
Well, exactly. I mean, the irony is, of course, if there was a, if there was no filibuster and he was the 50th vote for the Democrats, he would get that much more attention. But I imagine there would be a huge race to be that 50th vote. Nevertheless, one thing you can do with 50 votes plus one in the vice president is to pass things through reconciliation. You do not, that if it is, reconciliation is a specific parliamentary move, or a type of bill, if you will, that requires only a simple majority. There are restrictions on what constitutes a reconciliation bill. It has to deal exclusively with things that involve the government spending money. And so that comes into play if the Democrats take two seats in Georgia. Otherwise, we can imagine a tremendous amount of obstruction by the Republicans, although there are Americans who are desperate right now for stimulus. We have people on unemployment, extended unemployment. $600 benefits have dried up, but the actual extension of unemployment in terms of time, that's going to run out within a month or so. We have the stimulus checks, the one $1,200 7 months ago, I think have been expended.
Well, if you were a smart American, you would have held on to it.
I would have held on to it, or I would have invested it.
Right, invested in you know, gold or whatever. Or, right? That's or what just regular people do.
Put it in the market. I mean, that $1,200. There will be a desperate need for stimulus. One of the mechanisms for that stimulus can come through executive action. If you read enough of those personal finance books, they'll tell you, you know, if you're not paying 16% on your credit card, you're saving 16%, obviously, and you're earning 16%. You want to earn 5% or 10% on your money? Don't have any debt that you would be paying that money on. Well, so the point being that if you have the ability to relieve Americans of some debt, that will have a stimulating effect on the economy. It will put more money in people's pockets. They will be able to spend that money.
Right, but that gets in the way of directly sending money to corporations and socializing Wall Street. I mean, that's kind of what the game is. And now we're going to hear from Republicans lots of concern about the deficit and the debt.
Without a doubt.
Now that it's time to, after having an immensely dark winter where thousands and thousands and thousands of Americans are going to die and the economy is going to get in an even darker place, then fiscal responsibility and austerity will be the talking point.
Of course. It's like perennial after the Republicans lose an election.
Which makes that reconciliation point that you brought up even more important with taking back those two seats.
In the event that those seats don't come back in, executive actions are going to be crucial to provide at least some relief to people. Here's Joe Biden in Wilmington yesterday talking about, he is asked whether student loan forgiveness, because a huge amount of the student loan debt is held by the U.S. government. And that can be relieved by the executive branch, and that would be the president. Here is the question on Monday.
On the economy, the vice president-elect talked about having an economy that works for working people. One thing I didn't hear you talk specifically about is canceling student loan debt. Does student loan forgiveness figure in your plan? Would you take executive action to achieve it?
It does figure in my plan. I've laid out in detail, for example, the legislation passed by the Democratic House calls for immediate $10,000 forgiveness of student loans. It's holding people up. They're in real trouble. They're having to make choices between paying their student loan and paying their rent, those kinds of decisions. It should be done immediately. In addition to that, if you know, I think that everything from community college straight through to doubling Pell Grants to making sure that we have access, free education for anyone making under $125,000 for 4 years of college. And there is a program that exists now under the law that forgives student loans for being able to engaging in public service. I'm going to institute that fundamental change in that so it is able to be available to everyone that, in fact, is engaged. It's not being very well managed right now. So I'm going to do all of those things. Thank you.
Now, there's a lot to sort of unpack there.
Mm-hmm.
Congress, I would say the House, has passed a bill providing immediate relief, $10,000. Now, of course, the Senate's not going to pass that. He seems to be okay with that $10,000. The question is, and now, and because we do know that Schumer and Warren introduced a bill to forgive $50,000.
Right. Schumer, too, worried about a primary challenge, joining with Elizabeth Warren. I mean, if Warren had introduced it on their own, please, the Biden administration, you know, we're not paying attention. But with the Senate minority leader signing on to it, I mean, then we could have some more ambitious legislation here, potentially, if Pelosi gets her caucus together.
30,000. Well, we don't necessarily need Congress in this instance. All right, let's just assume if we're in a situation where there is the Democrats do not have the majority in the Senate. They don't have the ability to pass anything unilaterally. Mitch McConnell is not going to be terribly helpful. They will pass something. Undoubtedly, it will say that corporations cannot be held liable for the way that they treat their workers or, frankly, the citizenry in general, their customers, for health and safety and no liability. And then maybe there'll be some money for corporations or something or small businesses. Maybe there'll be a stimulus check. We don't know. But the point is, undoubtedly, if the Republicans have the ability to stop that legislation, they will do it. They will limit how much it helps people. Joe Biden, this is a unique opportunity for Joe Biden to both have the built-in justification for taking executive action on this point, the built-in justification for making it substantial in terms of how much debt is forgiven. The president of the American Association of Home Builders, I think this was 2 or 3 years ago, was saying at that time, and that was when student debt was about $1 trillion. It's now almost $1.5 trillion. Was saying the number one inhibitor of new home building was student debt.
Well, I mean, for my generation, it's a fantasy to own a home for most people. I mean, it's not something that's even considered because so many are crippled by student loan debt. I believe the average is what, $30,000 for young people and for everybody, I guess. So I think the difference in the House's less ambitious proposals that they wanted to tie it to the second stimulus, right? The $10,000. And Schumer and Warren are signaling to Biden, because they're in the minority right now, this is what you can do via executive action. You can be more ambitious. You can circumvent it, which, I think is good. I think it's really good. And it seems like he's listening, even though it seems like, based on those comments, he's more inclined to only do $10,000.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's going to be interesting to see. He didn't cite Warren and Schumer, but as soon as he mentioned that, everybody else did.
Right.
And so if that lands somewhere around $30,000 and it is a mechanism in which to put more money in the economy, everybody wins. It is a stimulus.
There was this NPR piece that talked about canceling student debt and what it would do. It could increase jobs by $4.4 million over the first 5 years. This is all student debt, home ownership by $300,000 a year, GDP up by over $100 billion a year, and it would decrease the racial wealth gap. I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer for the overall health of the economy if you want to just be a standard neoliberal politician in this area.
Right. And look, I mean, and I think, look, that's the best that we can have. I mean, that is the reason why this is so much easier because of the context. where this isn't a question of simply providing some equity or economic justice in the context of our society. It is much easier to do simply because it is going to be desperately needed, and you need to figure out any way possible that the executive can stimulate the economy. And this is the most obvious one that sits there. I would also say that there is a mechanism, it seems to me, to provide for that free college. If he wants to cap it at $125,000 and makes it easier, okay, fine. But one free college option, at least, in every state. And that is to provide loans and just have rolling debt forgiveness on those loans.
Yeah. You have to supplement the debt forgiveness with future college options so that debt isn't accrued. You can't just do it one time.
Exactly. And by hook or crook, I mean, if this comes in because of the situation we're in, not because Joe Biden is a dyed-in-the-wool progressive, I'll take it.
Well, it's you have to take a page out of the disaster capitalist book, as Naomi Klein put it in her her book, which is that oftentimes actors who want to capitalize on situations, they use the vacuum created by disasters and national and international crises to put in place systems that benefit them financially. And I mean, the war in Iraq is a great example for the military industrial complex and things like that. But progressives and people looking at this pandemic, we could use this opportunity to implement policies like healthcare and student debt forgiveness. This is a time of crisis. So it allows for bigger thinking.
And I, if I'm not mistaken, I think, you know, even Rahm Emanuel said at the time, in the wake of the financial crisis, you never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And wow, that it's an opportunity. Now, I didn't appreciate the opportunity he took.
Yeah, he kind of wasted
it. But the point being is, you need to see this as an opportunity to create, you know, once there is one-time student debt, once that idea happens and people can see that it's not, because I think that's the problem also that Republicans are going to have trying to revive this whole austerity and deficit hysteria, is that they already gave up the ghost. For 4 years, they didn't pay a single, they didn't care at all. Now, I happen to think that we don't really have a problem with the deficit and debt because of the fact that we have such control over our own currency. But based upon their own logic, Republicans completely gave up that idea. And good, I hope we never see it again. Meanwhile, got to take a we have a couple of words from our sponsors. Oh, this is a fun one. This is there's a couple of times where we get a sponsor where all of a sudden Brendan says, like, "Oh my gosh, I love those."
Oh, I can't wait.
My favorite. Here it is.
What is it?
Holidays are here. What are you going to get people? Are you already starting to make lists?
I already am. Yeah, I'm trying to get ahead of it.
It's smart. Do that. It's been this is one of those gifts that you would, I think you would imagine is like a little bit, seems a little bit banal, but these things are really, they take a banal product and make them special. It's going to sound silly, but a great pair of socks.
Oh yeah.
I'm not kidding about this. And this is what I was shocked when I mentioned this, Brendan. Features. Socks. I don't know if you've ever tried these.
I've never heard of it, but gifts with like a purpose, things that people can functionally use, always the best.
Yes. Well, Features has a huge range of socks that are tailored for bicycling, for running, and for golfing, and for more. They have zone-specific compression, gives you targeted support, keeps your socks from slipping. And here's the thing. They are anatomically designed for your left and your right feet.
Wow.
They actually have a little L and a little R on them. It is molded, and you wouldn't think that it would make a difference because they're socks.
Right.
But they genuinely do. They're super comfortable. They're incredibly durable. They have all sorts of like lengths. I happen to be more of like a crew sock length, but I'm, and sometimes I'll go with the absolutely no I don't know what those are called. The no thing. Brendan, right. What's your favorite? Brendan is like praises.
I wore them yesterday, actually, nice. When I was working out. I do the like quarter crew. I like those. But I also have a pair that's like just above the ankle.
Well, my dad's a big cyclist, and I've been struggling to find something that he wants for Christmas. And boom. Now, there we go. I have already decided.
I'm telling you, these are great socks. I've now basically come close to getting rid of all my old socks. It's very hard for me to throw out anything that isn't ripped.
Right.
I'm starting to replace my socks with these features. I got the Elite. I got the Everyday Crew. I've tried them all. They're excellent. And now you can get $10 off your first pair of features just in time for the holidays. Go to features.com/majority for $10 off your first pair. That's features, FEETURES.com/majority. Now, more than ever, of course, we're also thinking about our health. It can be hard to imagine going to a doctor's office right now. Fortunately, there's a practical and an affordable way to take control of your health. Get personalized care from the comfort of your home. You're seeing more and more of this. SteadyMD is your personal doctor online. It's telehealth, and it's done right. What happens is you start by taking a quiz, and you get matched with a licensed primary care physician who understands your health needs. I mean, they get very, very specific. They ask you all sorts of different questions about your lifestyle and this and that. Like, it almost felt like I was taking a Rorschach test and some of them, but there was stuff like, oh, what do you associate with? And I have a dad and then what sports do you play? And so what happens is you take this quiz. And then they give you a 1-hour appointment with your doctor. So they get a basic idea of what your health situation is. After that, your doctor is available to you anytime by text, phone, or video chat. You have unlimited access for only $99 a month with no additional visit fees or copays. Each SteadyMD doctor has a limited number of patients, so they have time to listen and give you personal attention. SteadyMD can help you get and stay healthy, help you manage chronic conditions, any type of concerns, reduce stress, boost your immunity, all sorts of different things. So I went through the test, and they ask you stuff like, what are your health goals? Lose weight, reduce stress. For me, get sleep, of course. And they gave me three different options on doctors. Some are parents, so that they can sort of appreciate, like, why am I not getting sleep? Because I've got kids. You know, right. You got kids. They understand that. One guy was a national champion snowboarder at age 13, apparently, because I put amazing. Down that I snowboard. One of the doctors that they gave me was experienced in stress reduction. I mean, so they tailor it to you, and then they give you options as to their availability, et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of fascinating. SteadyMD is now accepting members of all ages in all 50 states. You can go to SteadyMD.com/majority. Take the free quiz. See which doctor is a perfect fit for you. SteadyMD.com/majority. There's no risk, no long-term commitment to get started. That's SteadyMD.com/majority. And then lastly, Emma, you might like this because you stay at home a lot now during this whole COVID thing, right?
I mean, I do.
Most people do, but there are some people.
I'm not the bad millennial. Right. I'm not.
Okay. So, as you know, very difficult. You're at home. You played all your board games. Is your family like a board game people?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just obsessed with watching sports now. So that's kind of how I spend my time.
All right. Well, what do you think about murder mysteries?
Ooh, I do love those. I used to play those all the time when I was younger. I get back into it.
Well, okay. So Hunt a Killer. I've been doing this off and on over really the past couple of years with my daughter, because she at one point was like obsessed with the SVU or no, what is it?
Law and Order.
Yeah. Not just the SVU, but all of them.
All of them. Law and Order. SVU is the most salacious.
Oh yeah. Well, that's why I tried to get her back off that. Right. But, so we got Hunt a Killer. It's a murder mystery game that essentially comes to you. Well, you can speed it up if you want, but it comes once a month in a box. It has piles of documents, evidence, audio recordings that they put on thumb drives, case files, you basically go through the whole thing. It's like that true crime thing, except for you're the detective. And we set up a bulletin board with the tax and the
screen. Oh, my God.
It sort of fell apart after a while. But we had a little bit of that. And but it's fun. It's really fun. It's hard.
Can I just say, I got my second box. Me and my girlfriend are doing this, and I got my second box. We're doing the Cadence Theater one, and
it's the cold case.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this theater, and we actually ordered our second box early because we were ready to do it after the first one.
That's the Depression era one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Okay. There was a cold case. Like there was a cold case from the Depression era. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, you know, I had the opportunity to go through it with Myla and, you know, I mean, this is not going to be for most people, but like talk about like that era, like to force feed history into my kid.
That's kind of the thing I'd be into.
No, but they do it all different ones. There was also one where it was like, people went to a college reunion and, you know, it's like the Big Chill, except for somebody actually got killed. So right now, just for our listeners, you can go to huntakiller.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout for 20% off your first box. Head to huntakiller.com/majority, 20% off. Show your support for our podcast. That's huntakiller.com/majority. All right. So let's get back into this. One of the things that's happening now with the transition, amongst the things like Donald Trump last Thursday, apparently, you know, calling everybody in saying, can we bomb Iran?
Just make a splash on my way out. I mean, into a second Trump term.
Maybe he has a heartfelt desire to bomb Iran. And like, he thinks his legacy would be there. Apparently, you know, when Mike Pompeo and Mike Pence are basically the voices of reason, in any situation, you know, you got a problem, I think. Mm-hmm. But you can't help but wonder if it's like he's just looking for something like, I just need something that's going to get me one, you know, tiny loan from MBS or something like that. It appears that they decided to push that off the table. Now, the fact that we've heard about it 4 days later suggests to me that whoever leaked it, because you've got top advisors in the Oval Office with the president, are trying to sort of lock in and make sure that there's enough pushback that we don't bomb Iran right now.
And that's what you have to do with all of these Trump administration stories, although there won't be that many anymore. But it even applies to the Biden team. You have to decipher why this information is being provided to the press and work backward from there.
Exactly. It is very, very rare that you will get a story about what happens on the inside of an administration where it is not because someone involved in it in some fashion has an agenda that they are hoping this story will provide, that disclosure will provide some form of pressure in one way or another, and certain things will happen after that. I mean, it's very contextual, but you're absolutely right. I think
it's usually in Politico.
And it's usually in Politico. That becomes a little bit more naked. But in this instance, also what we're seeing, and people have heard about this, the blocking of the Biden transition. Part of it is simply Donald Trump's ego and his desire to build a grievance amongst his followers so that whatever his next project is, he will have that energized base. For Republicans in the Senate, part of that is to build grievance so that they turn out for a Georgian special election. Another part of it, I think, though, is by keeping the Biden transition team way on the outside, it means that the current Trump administration, to be clear, Republican administration, is able to go about getting involved in all sorts of mischief without having to dedicate any of their resources to a transition.
Exactly.
And without providing any transparency for that transition. So one of the things you get is this burrowing. Tell us about this John Ellis guy.
Yeah. So if you guys recall on the show the other day, we talked about John McEntee, who's this 30-year-old former college quarterback famous for trick shots on YouTube, who Trump has for some reason pushed up the ranks in his administration, and his sole job right now is to put Trump appointees, political appointees, in basically traditionally civilian positions.
Civil
service positions, so that it'll make it a lot harder for Joe Biden and his administration to take out these far right crazies when Biden does finally assume office. And so one of those people is Ellis, who used to his first name is escaping
John
me
Ellis.
Right now, John Ellis, who used to be the chief of staff for Devin Nunes, or sorry, chief counsel. And it's not a Senate confirmed role. This guy is far right, was a part of encouraging the Trump administration to put all that Ukrainian malfeasance on secret servers. And so basically what this 30-year-old college quarterback is doing, which is what I like to refer to him as because it's so absurd, is, as has been written about, burrowing these political appointees in civilian positions, providing them with civil service protections.
Exactly.
So that Biden and his ilk cannot get rid of them.
And here is the other scary part of this. This is not, I mean, there's sort of like the Ellis story, placing him at counsel in the NSA against the wishes of the head of the NSA. Now, it's conceivable after the fact that if the Biden administration gets in, they can move him to a different civil service position. But this conversion of political appointees to civil service workers in the government take an oath to the Constitution. They take an oath to be bipartisan. Usually these are people who work up through the ranks. They are career bureaucrats in the best sense of the word. They care about their work. They don't care who the president is. They do their job to make the government function. Places like the CDC used to be of this ilk.
Right. Well, I mean, Sally Yates was a good example of someone who kind of rose up and now is more in this political realm, but that was because Trump put her there. But like on a macro level, like Bill Barr is an example of somebody who's completely I know he's a political appointment,
right,
but all the decisions he's made has politicized the DOJ in the exact way that they're doing on the down low in every other area of the government.
Now, back 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, this story got buried because of the impending election. Apparently that distracted a lot of people. And there was a Trump appointed head of a key advisory council on the civil service who was himself a longtime civil servant, but had been appointed to this advisory board. He resigned. And he resigned over an executive order that Donald Trump issued. And this is how the Washington Post characterized that order. It was an executive order to redesignate career employees in, quote, confidential policy determining, policy making, and policy advocating positions as falling under rules that primarily apply to political appointees. Such accepted service positions do not require competition in hiring or even public notice that a position is available, do not allow for union representation, do not allow for appeals or of disciplinary action, including firing. Under the order, agencies are to conduct initial review within 3 months and a full review within 7 months of such positions. The OPM would then change their status, affecting both current and future employees. It's uncertain. So the bottom line is, it is looking to replace apolitical experts with political appointees.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the scary part, too. The first deadline of that review happens just before Inauguration Day in January. So there is some speculation. Certainly, this longtime Republican, this guy Ronald Sanders, felt like this was a bad idea, at the very least. You never see people resign from the U.S. government, or to the extent that they do, you never hear about it because there's this, I don't know, there's a...
I mean, the big resignation was the official under Barr who resigned after he was trying to instruct them to look into voting cases. I
exactly.
mean, we're seeing the fact that they're looting on their way out, or at least, you know, changing the wiring and the electricity, so it shocks you when you turn on a light in the living room, right? Like, that's what they're doing on their way out.
This is what Sanders had to write after he resigned from the Federal Salary Council. The order, and it could affect tens of thousands or more career positions that are involved in making or carrying out policy, quote, is nothing more than a smokescreen for what is clearly an attempt to require the political loyalty of those who advise the president, or failing that, to enable their removal with little, if any, due process. In other words, they want to make it possible to remove a lot of these civil servants and replace them with political appointees. At the very least, what this is going to do is it's going to drain resources from a Biden administration on day one. And it's going to make it difficult for them to actually do anything, because basically it's like, you know, you want to come in and, remodel the house. Well, first you're going to have to fix the plumbing, which we blew up.
Right.
Then you're going to have to fix the wiring, which we all cut. Then you're going to have to fix the sewers because we clogged them. I mean, that's basically what's going on here with the Trump administration. And it's not, you know, the story that we hear traditionally by the media is that this is about Donald Trump's, hurt ego, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
No doubt. This has been a consistent problem with both the media coverage and, I think, even to a larger extent, the Democrats, because it is very hard to expect the media to go further than the supposed opposition party in pointing this type of stuff
out.
Right. They should. The media should. But, human nature is what it is. And the Democrats, you would imagine, would be the ones who are most vocal about this. And this is an ongoing theme with the Democrats that we saw, you know, where the Democrats do not signal and do not direct people's attention to where the real problem is. This is not about Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not sitting there going like, I want my legacy to be that I was able to get rid of career bureaucrats in our government as I leave.
Right.
That's not what Donald Trump is worried about, his legacy. This is a project by Republican operatives.
Yeah. Well, they're the ones that say that they care so much or they hate government bureaucracy so much. They're literally gumming up the works, the bureaucratic works, in order to make government less functional on a bureaucratic level, because it's going to be so messed up once Biden enters.
Indeed. And these will have long-term implications. I've referred to this in the past, but 4 years ago, right around now, I think it was, we had Sam Bagenstos on, who served in the Department of Justice. He ran for Michigan State Supreme Court, I think it was last year, did not win. But he is a law professor, I think, at the University of Michigan. He was in the Justice Department under the Clinton administration, and then came back and was in the Justice Department under the Obama administration. So he saw what happened to the Department of Justice in 8 years of without these type of shenanigans. And he said it took 2 years or 3 years just to be able to attract personnel back into these departments, because all the people who genuinely cared about this stuff were basically given a message over the course of 8 years, like, you have no place here. And so Democrats really need to point this stuff out. It is not just about Donald Trump doesn't want to leave because he doesn't want to acknowledge a transition because of his hurt feelings. There's a lot of stuff going on in the executive branch right now. There's a story about the Arctic Reserve, and this is just nuts. This was in the Washington Post, I think it was today, or the New York Times, Washington Post. The Trump administration is asking oil and gas firms to pick spots where they want to drill into Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And they want them to do it now so they can auction them off before Biden gets in. There's a call for nominations. It is being published today in the Federal Register. It's basically saying, identify where you want to bid on about 1.6 million acres of coastal plain. This is a sale that the Interior Department wants to to essentially an auction to have
it's
before buying.
It's a fire sale.
It's a fire sale.
And then while setting the planet on fire as well, coincidentally.
Well, here's the unbelievable thing about it. The Post writes, it's unclear how much appetite there is in the oil and gas industry for drilling in the refuge, given the lack of infrastructure there, the public backlash that a company that could come forward. And basically, like, look, everyone knows that oil and gas is not a business for the future. The question is just like, what's the timeline? It's conceivable, though, you may have smaller companies come in, bid on this stuff just as a way of selling it back to the U.S.
Yeah.
Because claiming that they're going to go in there. The government also plans to auction off oil and gas rights to more than 383,000 acres of federal land in the lower 48 states in the next 2 months. I mean, this is a huge giveaway of all of our property, of the commons. The Energy Department is looking to weaken energy efficiency requirements for shower heads.
Well, I mean, it dovetails with the light bulb thing that Trump did. What was that, 2017, really early on?
But this was the light bulb thing. I can tell you this right now. During the Obama years, there were 4 or 5 years of constant pounding about the light bulb requirements.
And it actually was effective in terms of reducing our output.
It was incredibly effective in terms of reducing the output. And the other thing that happens when you have companies are required to do these type of efficiencies, you get better products.
Right. Well, for the viewers who didn't know, like back in, I think maybe it was 2017, Trump undid all of Obama's light bulb efficiency requirements, which were actually very effective in reducing our carbon footprint just immediately. It was a part of everything he undid as soon as he got in. Just now, boom, boom, boom.
In that instance, the light bulb companies were like, well, we're not going to switch back because we have no reason to. We are making more efficient light bulbs. They're actually better. We now have like the ability to like change their color. Like we have smart bulbs, the LED technology that they developed in a expedited fashion because of these requirements. We saw it also with the CAFE standards that he tried to reverse. And California was like, well, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
And the car companies were like, we don't want you to do it because we actually feel more comfortable knowing that 5, 10, 15, 20 years out, we need to make far more efficient cars.
So it's not just an ungoverning. It's not just a deregulating. It's also a looting, which I feel like sometimes the media misses, right? Like, it's not just getting rid of regulations to be this old school kind of conservative who says, yeah, libertarian, let the builders build, do whatever the hell they want, whatever, right? Like, it's also so his friends and him can get rich quick, really quick, before it all dries up.
Absolutely. And we're also seeing things like the administration pressing ahead with other moves to expand energy development and scale back federal environmental rules. It aims to finalize a plan to open up a vast majority of the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska drilling to adopt a narrower definition of what constitutes a critical habitat for endangered species. And when companies are liable for killing migratory birds. I mean, they're going on a spree here. And Democrats need to call this stuff out because we get reporting like this, but it's not going to be, you know, this is not a headline story for people, but it is important for Democrats. You know, when we talk about why they lost down ballot, right? It is because And Joe Biden, I think, ran the perfect, frankly, Joe Biden campaign.
Right.
And that was, I don't necessarily have a whole lot of a vision to offer. I don't necessarily. I mean, he has some good proposals, some that are not so great, but it's pretty banal stuff.
But vision is different than, you know, policy, throw this in the wall, whatever.
He was offering people a choice. This is a referendum. Do you want Donald Trump or not? I am a non-offensive, not me personally, but Joe Biden is saying I'm a non-offensive replacement for Donald Trump. And, you know, I'm sure there were people who were like, I've always been a Joe Biden fan. You know, for years, I followed all his work when he you know, put the bankruptcy bill and wouldn't let people discharge their obligations in a way a corporation could. I mean, there could be people out there who are like that. Like, I really appreciated the fact that he always had the credit card company's backs.
Yeah,
that's the thing I like
about it. It's more just cultural. But, always BFFs with Obama, always kind of folksy, always wears aviators.
Right. I mean, the point is that Joe Biden was presenting himself as a non-offensive replacement for someone that everybody was, or at least 77 million people, were offended by. Mm-hmm. The problem is that down ballot, that doesn't work because I don't need, like I did in 2018, to vote for the Democrat to send a message to Donald Trump that I don't like him because I can vote against Donald Trump. The Democrats did nothing to tie Donald Trump to the Republicans.
They did the opposite.
Joe Biden was out there saying, hey, I want Democrats. Go ahead, vote for Democrat. I mean, I want Republicans. We need Republicans. Nancy Pelosi said this as well. And I'm sorry. I get the sentiment. We should have some tension within our, but that's not the job of Democrats to say that you should go out and support Republicans. We played a clip of Chris Coons the other day where he was asked by a news anchor, you know, after he had said Republicans refuse to accept the end of this this election, what are they saying in private? Well, in private, they're wishing Joe Biden good luck and they're saying he's, you know, president. I mean, it's basically laying the Republicans off the hook. Here is Dick Durbin doing the exact same thing. This is the Democratic whip. And he is once again understand there's a reason why Mitch McConnell is not criticizing Donald Trump for not accepting the election results. And that's because he's trying to motivate Republican voters in Georgia. There's a reason why Leffler and Perdue are attacking a Republican Secretary of State in Georgia. There's a reason why Lindsey Graham is out trying to get that Republican Secretary of State to change votes.
States' rights, right? Even though he's a senator from South Carolina, you got to weigh in on Georgia Secretary of State and their electoral process.
They are trying to draw attention to what's going on in Georgia, and they are trying to demonize anybody who made it possible for Joe Biden to win the election by not throwing it to Donald Trump. That's what they're doing. That's the kind of hardball they're playing. And here's Dick Durbin going out, and I don't know if you could come up with a more contrary message than if you're a Democrat, you need to go and vote, and you're in Georgia, you need to get people to vote. If you know people in Georgia, you need to get them to vote for Warnock or Ossoff. Here's Dick Durbin. This is him on Saturday. I mean, it's nuts.
Is Point comfortable with eliminating the filibuster?
Listen, I live in the world of Senate rules more than most. And I understand how they can be used effectively and how they can just be a roadblock to anything happening. Here's the good news. In conversations I've had since November 3rd with Republican senators, we sat down and got very honest and very candid on a personal basis, and they are frustrated. They want the Senate to do things. I believe that's where the potential is for the future, that with Republicans who are ready for the Senate to be active and engaged in finding compromises and moving forward, the Senate rules won't hold us back.
So no, don't end the filibuster. You wouldn't support it right now? Because, you know, Senator Manchin calls it BS.
Yes. Well, I can tell you at this point, there are a lot of factors involved. At this point, what I want to focus on is first, winning Georgia. Second, finding bipartisan solutions. And third, letting Joe Biden use the presidency to put America back on its feet, to overcome the COVID-19 pandemic.
How will he do that?
And to get this economy back to work.
Okay.
How will he do that?
Well, let's just start with what he wanted to focus on.
Okay, cool.
That is, number one, winning Georgia. Is there anybody in earshot of me can explain how going on national television and saying in private, now none of them is saying this publicly, what they're saying publicly right now is that the election was stolen in Georgia for Donald Trump. But in private, what they're saying is that we can get along and that we can strike bipartisan.
So there's no real
solutions.
Consequences for Georgia.
So there's no real consequences. It's not that important because in private, they're actually, I mean, like, duh, like, I, this is, I know this is not an ideological argument, folks. I mean, at least within the context of the Democratic Party. I mean, there's a little bit of an ideological fight in the Democratic Party. But this is just simply about, like, basic messaging. If you're telling us that you're focused on Georgia, why? Why is Georgia important? Why do we need a Democratic majority in Georgia? Why do we need those things to get a Democratic majority in the Senate? I mean, if they're telling you in secret and you believe them, the Republicans are saying, like, we're going to be able to work together. We really want to do something. Then why do we need a Democratic majority?
Yeah.
You've just given up your number one talking point as to win that election, right as you're saying it's my number one priority.
One side says election stolen, right?
Fake president.
Are you about that? How angry are you that the election was stolen from the candidate that you liked who almost won that state? Wow, those supporters might be really pissed off, right? Can you imagine if there was a similar situation after the end of 2016, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, it's for the Democrats, you can't because they wouldn't fight. But the other side is saying, oh, there's no consequences. Don't even worry about it. Because Republicans are actually really good people behind the scenes. It was Trump that was always the problem.
I mean, I don't understand. Like, I understand. Like, I'm not suggesting that Dick Durbin go out there and say that, Republicans are all horrible human beings and whatnot. But, like, why do you need to offer up? First off, I could say, like, why would you believe them? Why, like, can you point
to
any,
true.
Like, Mitch McConnell has time and time again pulling the rug out from under the Democratic Party, whether it was, you know, threatening Barack Obama for releasing the fact that there was Russian interference in the run up to the election, whether it was just, you know, in Obama's own memoir where McConnell's like, you know, they're coming to McConnell, like, we need to get this. Like, why would you think I care about that? Like, but even if you did believe them, why would you give them the out? Like, make them say it. There's a reason why the Republicans will not say that publicly, because they know it's going to hurt them politically. It's going to hurt their chances of winning in Georgia. It's going to hurt them politically. Why do Democrats refuse to engage in politics? This is what politics are. There is no reason for you to go on and give your opinion on CNN or MSNBC or ABC or Fox or wherever it is. This show, we don't need to hear your opinion about maybe if you want to communicate with the American public, it should be for two things. It should be to explain policies, or it should be to win political power so you can implement those policies that you can go on television and explain about.
Well, what about if you want to do a masturbatory exercise and feel really good about yourself and go on cable news?
I don't even think that's what's going on with Durbin. I just think that they are not. I just think that, like,
sometimes that's the Democrats. That's more Manchin. But yeah, it's this fetishization of this senatorial, all of us 100 folks working together and blah, 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 which the Republicans never engage in, and they win disproportionately. So maybe make your case.
Make your case. If you're telling, don't tell the CNN host or the MSNBC host or whoever it is that your number one priority is winning in Georgia. Show it. Do it.
Yeah.
Perform that priority. Don't tell us, because you could tell us that the number one priority is Georgia, and then you go on and completely undercut that priority. I mean, we see this time and time and time again. We saw it, and this is what brings us to this fight that's happening, you know, and I don't know how successful or possible it is that we may see a new minority leader in the House. My guess it would be unlikely, particularly since it is less consequential, because there's no opportunity to pass anything unless the Democrats take the Senate. And even then, it's mostly reconciliation stuff. You're not going to have a broad opportunity. But, you know, yesterday on this program, the second half of our program, we had a little bit of a, a debate. It wasn't necessarily with somebody who's, you know, he's not even a Democrat. He's an independent who is worried about, he says, for the Democratic Party because of their infighting. He seemed to be mostly worried about the infighting as it related to
defund the police.
Well, as it related to, like, AOC and Bernie Sanders, for whatever reason.
Right.
As if Bernie Sanders is involved in the House leadership fight. He's not. He's a senator. And he's actually in the Democratic leadership of the Senate, even though he is, I think he's still registered as an independent.
He is, and who cares? It's just like, it's like a weird, you know, Northeast thing.
Right.
Like,
but this independent who came on the show was saying that AOC didn't, I don't know. She was not a good Democrat. This guy's not even a Democrat himself. But the interesting thing was, is that my argument has been and continues to be, and I think, like, you know, AOC has said something like this, and Doug Jones, who is not a Democratic socialist, he is not from the Bronx or Queens or North Brooklyn. He is from Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug Jones, he said that the Democrats have a problem, and that is that they focus, when they do campaigns, they focus on the candidate. They don't focus on the district. And that is indicative of an apparatus that is not oriented towards building power on the ground.
Well, if Beyonce does another video for these candidates, maybe it'll put them over the top. It's counterintuitive if you're the party that's trying to advocate for more worker-friendly policies, I guess marginally, right? Why are you not talking to people and regular folks in the area and allowing to cede that ground to Republicans? I mean, and it's been a constant problem for over 10 years at this point, for even longer than that, right?
Right.
There's no apparatus that encourages shoe leather politics, right? That's right. The right, correct.
Well, yes. And there was, and Howard Dean, when he was in charge of the DNC in the run-up to the 2008 election, had instituted, and not fully executed it, but it certainly was growing, was a 50-state strategy.
Yep.
Investing in state parties and helping them build an infrastructure, not in a run up to an election, but when there is no election, like build a presence that exists outside of a campaign apparatus. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you who the latest person is to question the Democratic leadership in the House. And here's a clue. It is not a member of the squad. So the person who this story came out, and I was a little bit upset too, because the person that we had that debate with yesterday, I had sent this to him and I was like, we could do round two on this.
Mm-mm.
Because supposedly it was about Democratic infighting. But it turns out it probably was not about Democratic infighting. It was somebody trying to push a certain side in an ideological fight within the Democratic Party, which to me is distinct from the question of Democrats just performing politics. And Representative Elisa Slotkin, she is one of those sort of like high profile Democrats, you know, from Michigan that you hear people talking about, could be like, you know, the future of the moderates in the party.
Well, yeah, right? I mean, she's a former CIA,
indeed,
DOD, military industrial complex folk,
and sort of the ilk from Abigail Spanberger in some respects, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'd love to hang out with them, being sarcastic.
Well, she said that she came out and said she won't support Nancy Pelosi's bid to serve Speaker again. And she says, I will not be voting for Nancy Pelosi. She told Politico, this is a report that came from Friday. I have no idea if people are going to run against her or who might run against her. And I will, of course, have this conversation directly with her. But I believe we need new leadership. I'd love to see more Midwesterners, because if you look across the leadership, I respect these people, but it's New York and California. I mean, I think there's something to be said about that.
Totally.
From a geographic standpoint.
Well, the reason they're there is because they have the largest fundraising networks. I mean, that's why Hakeem Jeffries is being floated to potentially replace Pelosi. It's why he's in leadership now. It's why Chuck Schumer's in leadership. They don't get it based on political acumen. They get it based on fundraising prowess.
AOC, of course, is the number three fundraiser.
Yeah,
in the
she
Democratic
does it without compromising her integrity.
And here's what she said. There's absolutely no accountability from the speaker. We should have won big. But, you know, the defund the police issue, the Green New Deal, those issues killed our members. Now, there's absolutely zero data to that effect. And if, I mean, first of all, like, tell Ed Markey that Green New Deal is a problem. Now, maybe it wasn't a problem in Massachusetts, but the point being, the idea that the Green New Deal was not a problem in 2018 at all, but is a problem in 2020 is absurd.
In fact, it polls pretty well. And Republicans are never held to account for not dismissing the members of their caucus that are QAnon believers.
Right. Of course. Like, I mean, why wasn't the QAnon
or cost Trump the election?
Why didn't QAnon or Trump hurt Republican? This is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way for Nancy Pelosi to keep Fox News viewers or Mark Levin listeners or watchers from believing that Democrats are, you know, coming for your hamburgers, that they're part of a satanic pedophile cult or any of this stuff. She can't prevent that. But what Democrats can do is make Republicans own the stuff, not that, like, you don't want to make them own the Proud Boys who are out there, you know, talking about white people will rise up again in certain situations. And
but they partly did make them own white supremacy with Charlottesville in 2018, and it was effective.
Indeed. If you only held Donald Trump to account for that.
Right.
Not Republicans. Make the Republicans own their liabilities. There was no attempt to do that. Their biggest liability was Donald Trump. Did not let the Republicans own that. We heard from the top of the ticket on down, once Donald Trump is gone, these guys, the fever will break again. We've heard that from Democratic leaders all through the Obama administration, where we lost 1,000 down ballot seats over the course of those 8 years, a lot of them in 2010. This is a problem with the Democrats. You can talk about the liabilities that are held against you because there are people in the streets calling for social justice. What are you doing to make your opponents own their liabilities? The answer is nothing. You did not hold them to account. Pelosi made every subpoena go through her office. You didn't allow even your committee chairs to have oversight hearings. This is a real problem with the Democratic Party, and it's not a question of ideology. It is a question of merely performing politics, which is more and more essential because they're running away with it. They have a lot more of an infrastructure. They have a lot more of tools in this. Democrats need to get serious about this. We will talk about this more in the coming days. Don't forget, you can watch us on the Peacock app, on the Choice channel. Check us out. We rerun again at 5 p.m., 10 p.m., and through the night. And if you're still with us, we're going to head into the fun half. We got more to talk about. We did a lot of news today. We didn't even get into Joe Biden threatening not to hold Donald Trump accountable.
Well, I mean, I don't even think it's a threat. I think it's a promise. He's a Nazi, but we're not going to do anything about it. He's a criminal. We all know he's a criminal. Ay, ay, ay. I mean, were we anticipating anything different after the Obama years where the same thing happened? Bush committed war crimes and there was...
She made a big issue about turn the page. All right. Well, we're going to take a break.
I mean, the right thing to do would be to say we're going to turn the page and then have people who in the Justice Department who don't turn the page and actually like go back over the page and say, oh, well, we wanted to turn the page, but we couldn't. But I somehow don't think that's the plan.
I know. It's nuts. It's so – it's – I mean, it is – I like to think that he's just saying this, you know, now and that, you know, but I don't think that's the case. I think they generally don't want to hold them to account. And part of it, look, I can take a, we'll talk more about this later in the fun off, but I can take a cynical view of it, and I can take a less cynical view of it. The most cynical view of it is, they don't want to dig into this stuff because they don't want to have to be held to that standard as well.
Yep. But the less cynical one is that they genuinely don't want to cause more division in the country. And it could be both.
I think that is a fool's errand, though. Of course, that doesn't happen. And the less cynical is that they're bad at politics and they do not hold people to account. And so you had Barack Obama, so many things that were problematic. Like just even, let's say, like a Guantanamo.
Or Wall Street. Wall Street would be less egregious than prosecuting, say, like Trump or Bush himself, right? Like, which I understand their argument more there as opposed to like literal criminals who crashed the economy.
Well, when you contemplate how hard it was, and I do think it was genuinely hard for Barack Obama to meet his promise in terms of Guantanamo, in terms of closing Guantanamo. Part of that was because the Democratic senators got really scared too. Mm-hmm. If you do not hold these people to account, not only do you increase the likelihood that they will repeat this, right? I mean, savings and loan crisis in 87, brings you the banking, problem. Iran-Contra or mm-hmm. Watergate brings you Iran-Contra, brings you, the Iraq War. I mean, it just goes on and on and on like this. If you don't hold people to account, regardless of what institution it is, you are going to get the same problem again. And as a political matter, the problems you have, they're going to be divorced from context because you, who everybody relies on, right? Like you rely on the opposition party to point out the failings of the party they are opposed to. And if they don't do it, it doesn't matter if we sit here and talk about it. It doesn't matter if, you know, some third party says it, because the fact that the opposing party is not saying anything mitigates anything you say.
Yep.
Because if it was really bad, wouldn't they do something about it? I mean, that was the one benefit of, and it was too narrow and whatnot, but it was the one benefit of impeachment because, and that's why you saw like people's, opinion of impeachment went up, or support for impeachment went up when the Democrats said, we've got to impeach, because it indicates to people that, oh, wait, this is serious.
Wait, there's a legitimacy behind it as opposed to just talking heads, you know, yes. Talking about it.
You've got to show, not tell.
Exercise your power. Right, exactly. Well, I mean, that's when we're talking about political rhetoric from the Democrats. I mean, it's the same thing when we were talking about Elise Slotkin, right? So, you know, there can be unity around strategy of holding Republicans accountable across ideological spectrums. I mean, she's as conservative of a Democrat yep. as it gets. But there can be, okay, we're going to actually hammer them on this, and then we can have our intra-caucus discussions about defund the police.
Like, yeah, exactly. Deal. Like, even if AOC came out and said, like, I believe we should fund the police, and I believe in a brown new deal. You know what I mean? Even if she came out and said this, and every single Democrat, the question remains, what are you doing to get a political, like, what is your political advantage over the Republicans? Like, mm-hmm. where are you exercising? They're not. And that's really frustrating. This is all fun half stuff. We're giving, right, I can't believe we're giving this stuff for free.
Yeah, I know.
Folks, if you want to become a member of the program and hear more of this, then go to jointhemajorityreport.com. right now and become a member. It is your support that makes the free show possible. And then we give you extra content. We'll take your phone calls, take your IMs. Also, don't forget amquickie.com. Check out the AM Quickie. 7 minutes of headline news in your, not in your email box, but maybe we should institute something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can find it on your podcast server. And of course, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code GETMAJORITY, get 10% off. Get the Majority Report blend. Have you ever had that, Emma?
Not yet.
I find that hard to believe, but okay. Also, don't forget, Hunt a Killer. It's a murder mystery subscription box where you sift through piles of documents, evidence, audio recordings, and more, eliminating suspects and identifying murder weapons until you crack the case and catch the killer. Hunt to Killer has over 2,000 five-star reviews. It's no wonder why people love them so much. Go to hunttokiller.com/majority. Use the promo code majority at checkout for 20% off your first box. You will have fun just like new Matt. Don't forget, check out Nomi's show. Is she going to be with us? Is Nomi, do we have her?
Yep, here she comes.
Okay. Nomi's show comes right on, right after ours. Here she is. Nomi.
Hi.
Hi. What's going on with that?
What's with what?
No, we just heard a buzz. That's your new backdrop. I like it.
Oh, wow.
For now. Just going to change it up. But you know what's happening right now is next door someone's doing construction, so I'm just going to mute myself when I'm not talking.
All right. Well, who's going to be on your show today aside from some guys doing construction?
Yeah, they're going to be on all day. It's so exciting. A special guest appearance. We are going to be talking about Bolivia. Just like the
on your mic. Are you guys getting that, or is that just me?
Yeah, but I think that's the way Zoom tries to cancel out those noises, I think.
Oh, wait, I don't understand though. Because
is there noise going on right now, Nomi?
No, there's no noise.
Well, there's some electronic feedback with your mic.
Uh-oh. Right, how is it now?
Now you sound better.
Okay, I just turned off my phone. Maybe it was that. These are the moments that everybody's been waiting for. We're going to be talking about Bolivia pretty much for the majority of the show, just because we haven't dedicated a lot of the show to international stuff. So now that the election's sort of over, we're delving in. Chris Hawley is going to be on. Napoleon DeLegend is going to be on to talk about it afterwards. And just a brief little synopsis of all the things Trump is doing in the final 2 months. You know, just checking them off the list, like, you know, drilling in the Arctic, selling property in Alaska, finding a new NSA chair, whatever. It's the list goes on and on. That's our exciting show today, guys. So go there, youtube.com/TheNomiKeyShow.
There you go, folks. Also, don't forget the Antifada. You can find it at patreon.com/TheAntifada. Matt, what's happening on TMBS tonight?
Paul O'Connell joins us. David actually talked to him this afternoon about what's going on with labor and the Corbyn split. Maybe a messy break going on in the Labor Party. We're going to talk about that. So tonight, patreon.com/TMBS and the Michael Brooks Show on YouTube.
All right. And lastly, I got a special announcement. It's Brendan Finn's birthday. He turns, who are you now, Brenda? 18? Turn 18.
Yeah, 18. That's right. Still the youngest person on the show.
There you go. He's now 18 years old. And he's allowed to vote. So there you go.
That's true. I will give my shout out because I've been seeing a little chatter online. You know, friend of the show, caller, Jeff from Georgia is in the hospital now. And I think he's doing better. And I just wanted to say, you know, get well soon.
Yep. We saw a report that he's doing well. People can check him out on Georgia. Send you best wishes. All right. See you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous? You're a little bit upset? You're riled up?
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh.
coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
Two.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook. Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.